to Tuned To Yesterday, bringing you shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, with you for an hour of crime drama. Later in the hour, it's High Adventure with a newspaper story from 1950. But right now, it's Bob Bailey as Detective George Valentine on Let George Do It. This episode from the Mutual Broadcasting System from August 18th, 1952, called Seeds of Destruction.
Personal notice, danger's my stock and trade. If the job's too tough for you to handle, you've got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full detail.
Standard Oil Company of California invites you to Let George Do It. Now, tonight's story, Seed of Destruction, a transcribed adventure of George Valentine.
Dear Mr. Valentine, the name Dan Creighton must be familiar to you. Anyone who's read a newspaper or turned on the radio in the last 3 weeks must react to it. Out of morbid curiosity, if nothing else. Well, I'm Mrs. Dan Creighton. And the mystery of my husband's disappearance is something that I just can't stand any longer. I can't sleep nights. I hate the sound of the doorbell for fear that it's the police or the reporters again. And yet I rush to answer it because it might be some news of him, good news or bad. I almost think at this point that even bad news would be better than none. Mr. Valentine, I'm through waiting. I want you to help me. I'll pay you well. And believe me, the case is challenge enough for anyone. So please, come right away. Anxiously yours, Edna C. Creighton.
Of course, I know some of the details, Mrs. Creighton, from the newspapers.
But I want you to forget them, all of them.
What?
All of them. I want you to start with only one fact, Mr. Valentine.
Namely?
My husband vanished into thin air, without reason, without leaving a single clue.
Do you really believe that's possible, Mrs. Creighton?
Well, when you and Mr. Valentine start checking for yourselves, Miss Brooks, I think you will be convinced it can be.
Well, then there isn't much point in our even tackling it, is there?
Oh, but there is.
Hmm?
Well, for one thing, I know you and your reputation, Mr. Valentine. You couldn't resist a puzzler like this if you tried.
Touché, Mrs. Creighton.
Point number two, there's always the seed of destruction.
I beg your pardon.
It's part of a German proverb that my grandmother used to quote to me when I was a child.
Proverb?
The seed of destruction is within all of us, and give it room to grow and nothing can stop it.
That's a cheerful thought.
As a matter of fact, it is, because it will destroy that criminal.
And you're sure there's a criminal involved, eh, Mrs. Creighton?
Dan didn't leave me of his own accord. He didn't. Something happened to him.
I see. And all I start with is the picture of Mr. Creighton. Is that it?
Oh, it's the one that I always like best.
He's a very good-looking man.
Is that so strange? Why shouldn't he be?
Well, I just...
I was a very handsome young lady when we were married, believe it or not. Oh, I'm sorry. But I've just been under terrible pressure.
I understand.
You will try and find Mr. Creighton, won't you, Mr. Valentine?
Yes. Yes, Mrs. Creighton. And I'll respect your wish. I'll check every step of this case for myself, taking nothing for granted. Not even anything you said to me. Right?
Quite right, Mr. Valentine.
No, Valentine, no. Nobody's timing can be that perfect. It can't be.
Okay, Johnson, okay. It's too early in the year to make a bid for an Oscar.
Yes, Lieutenant, just what's bothering you?
For 3 weeks, I'm safe on the sidelines, out of reach of fire and brickbats. Then today, the commissioner hands me and homicide the Creighton case. Because missing persons can't do anything, and the papers are riding them, and because...
And I get hired by Mrs. Creighton. Why, that should be cause for celebration, Johnson. You know, shoulder to shoulder, two heads are better than one, all that sort of thing.
That's better. See, George, the good lieutenant is normal again.
All right, seriously, Johnson, what are the facts? Simple, hard facts.
Darn few. Creighton and his wife's brother, Stan Collins, own a bunch of small movie houses in this section of the country. Creighton was visiting one of their theaters in Ridgely Plains. when he got a call from a party, or parties unknown, walked out to meet him, or rather her, with a big happy grin on his face, and was never seen again.
The phone call was definitely from a woman, huh? The papers didn't have that.
Papers don't know everything.
No leads so far.
Oh, 100 of those, but not a good solid one on the bunch.
And so homicide gets called in.
And it's going to be a big headache. If Dan Creighton's been dead for 3 weeks, where's the body? The boys and missing persons are smart. They looked high and low.
And found nothing.
Yeah. And Valentine, you know that getting rid of a body is about the hardest job there is in the whole world.
Not to be obvious, a murderer could have buried poor Mr. Creighton.
Ridgely Plains is a highly choice suburb. Every inch of ground is carefully cultivated. No one has been seen doing any extracurricular digging.
Oh.
Well, Johnson, good luck to you on your future search in Ridgely Plains. We'll probably see you there sometime.
Sometime. Do you have anything more important to do?
Well, as a matter of fact, I have. I promised Mrs. Creighton to take no shortcuts, but check every step of the case myself. Come along, Brooksy.
Dead. You gave me a scare, Mr. Valentine.
I simply said that's one assumption the police must make, Mr. Collins.
Yes, I suppose so. It'd be a terrible shock to Edna. She built her whole life around Dan. You've noticed that, haven't you, Miss Brooks?
Yes, I have.
Mr. Collins, I understand that you and Mr. Creighton have been having some differences of opinion lately, at least about the way the future of this business should be run.
I gather that you've snooped around here enough to get that information.
Well, in my business, this kind of snooping is sort of glorified by the name detective work.
Yes, I guess so. I'm sorry.
Besides, your sister did want Mr. Valentine to take nothing for granted in this case, check everything for himself.
Well, actually, I suppose I'm the more daring partner in this team. You see, there are things I want to do that Dan was holding back on. Things that would take a great deal of the firm's money.
Yes. Go on, please.
Well, on this last trip around, Dan has been taking as much money away from the different theaters as was feasible. Usually, it had been forwarded here to the office, but I presume Dan was sort of making sure I wouldn't get my hands on it to do anything impulsively.
I see. Then by the time Mr. Creighton had gotten around to Ridgely Plains, he had quite a lot of money with him.
Yes, that's right.
Was this gathering up of the money purely one-sided, Mr. Collins? After all, since you were partners...
I'm afraid I didn't realize what Dan was doing until very late. I did beat him to the punch at the last place, however.
Ridgely Plains?
Yes, Miss Brooks. I was there the day before Dan came and disappeared. Oh, the police know all about that. I've been thoroughly checked and given a clean bill of health.
Still, to be brutally frank, Mr. Collins, you would benefit in a business sense if anything happened to Mr. Creighton.
To be brutally honest, Mr. Valentine, I'd benefit greatly. But I wouldn't look for the seed of destruction in me.
Oh, so you know about that, huh?
Well, after all, Edna and I heard the same proverb from the same grandmother.
Uh-huh.
Tell me, Mr. Collins, how did Mr. Creighton get around to those different movie houses?
Oh, his secretary, Paul Dore, always drove him. Nice young man.
Oh.
Well, I wonder if Mr. Dore would have time to drive us to Ridgely Plains, Mr. Collins.
Why, yes, I'm sure he would. You see, Mr. Valentine, the truth of the matter is, I'm anxious for you to find my brother-in-law. Ralph Holder, the manager of our theater there, he too will do everything he can to help you.
Mr. Creighton was standing just about here in the lobby when the phone call came. Isn't that right, Mr. Holder?
That's right, Mr. Dore.
Mm-hmm. It was just before noon. The theater wasn't open yet, huh?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, it was about the same time as right now.
And as I get it, an usher answered the phone and then told Mr. Creighton it was for him.
That's exactly what happened, Mr. Valentine. The usher Joe is around somewhere. I'll get him for you.
Thanks, Mr. Holder.
Mr. Dore.
Yes, ma'am.
Strictly off the record, do you have any idea who the lady on the phone might have been? As I understand it, you and Mr. Creighton have made periodic trips here to Ridgely Plains.
Oh, I wouldn't know anything about Mr. Creighton's personal life or his friends.
I bet. Would you venture a general opinion?
Oh, of course, sir.
Would you call Mr. Creighton, to coin a phrase, a gay dog?
I wouldn't say so.
Uh-huh.
This is Joe Ritchie, Miss Brooks, and Mr. Valentine.
How do you do?
And Mr. Valentine would like to ask a few questions, Joe.
Yeah, sure thing.
The lady who asked for Mr. Creighton when you answered the phone.
Hey, sounded nice.
You have no idea who she was?
Yeah, it's a funny thing. Voice sounded familiar, sort of. I can't say I recognized her.
Oh, that's too bad.
Of course, she didn't say very much, just asked to talk to Mr. Creighton. Yeah, but from her voice... I bet that dame would be a lot of fun. Yes, sirree.
Joe.
Sorry, miss. Well, knowing Mr. Creighton, I mean...
Well, go on, Joe. What were you going to say?
Nothing except that he always got around, if you know what I mean.
You're making it very clear, Sonny.
Mr. Creighton was a very friendly man, and sometimes he would get lonely, but
the night before, he sure made a play for Miss Barton.
Miss Barton?
Our cashier. Lovely young lady. I'm sure Mr. Creighton was being just...
Friendly, I know.
Anything else you want to know, Mr. Valentine?
No thanks.
You're welcome.
Anything else we can do?
Did Mr. Creighton say anything after the conversation with the mysterious lady?
Yes, he told me to go on back to the city. He'd join me there later.
And did you?
Yes, of course.
Now, it took you less than an hour to drive us out here, Paul. You didn't get back to the city until 4 that afternoon.
I checked. Oh. Well, as a matter of fact, I didn't go right back. I spent a couple of hours with a friend here.
Friend?
A girl, a lady.
Yes?
She has nothing to do with any of this. There's no point in mentioning her name. I won't.
All right, we were just curious. And you, Mr. Holder, what did you do after Mr. Creighton left for his mysterious appointment?
I went home for lunch. It's only a couple of blocks. I always go home for lunch.
At 1 o'clock?
What?
I checked.
Yes, that's right. But you see, my wife was leaving town the next day and had some shopping to do, so I went earlier.
I see. Your wife's been gone ever since, is that right, Mr. Holder?
Yes, sir. Visiting her family.
Any time you'd like me to drive you back to the city, Mr. Valentine?
I'll ask you, Paul. Thanks. Thanks very much.
Out with Mr. Creighton? No, sir. Not this little girl.
Oh, I was just curious, Miss Barton.
I turned him down flat. And I was with my roommate all the following day, so I didn't see him at all.
I know that. I was just curious to get your opinion of Mr. Creighton, more than anything else.
He was a wolf, mister. The most dangerous kind. Oh, it isn't that I'm afraid of anybody. And if a nice man were to ask me to go out, I'd be only too glad.
You've been a great help, Miss Barton. Goodbye.
George, there's no question about Mrs. Holder leaving town the day after Mr. Creighton disappeared.
Everything checks?
Yes. She's been making plans to go to Chicago for quite some time. Talked about them to the neighbors.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Holder bought her a ticket. Drove her to the station.
What did the neighbors say she looked like?
Well, they say she was very pretty. Younger than Mr. Holder. Liked better things than he could get her on his salary.
Good work, Brooksy. I think we ought to see if we can find Lieutenant Johnson around anyway.
That could very well be it, Valentine. Creighton had a lot of money. He had an eye for pretty women. He and Mrs. Holder probably ended up somewhere in South America to save themselves the trouble of getting, shall we say, 2 divorces.
Well, it adds up that way, doesn't it?
Poor Mrs. Creighton. And I'm sorry for Mr. Holder, too.
Yeah, no wonder we couldn't find anybody. We looked high and low. I told you, the hardest thing in the world is to get rid of a body.
No, Johnson, you're wrong.
What?
To get rid of 2 bodies would be even harder.
A susceptible and wealthy married man, Dan Creighton, disappears mysteriously after receiving a phone call from a lady. And so you're hired by Mrs. Creighton to try and find him. Well, you get to work and dig up enough evidence to give you a logical answer. Creighton ran away with someone else who was straining at marital ties. Mrs. Holder, the wife of the manager of one of the movie theaters owned by Creighton. So there it is. Case solved. But if your name is George Valentine, you seem to have reservations about accepting your own answer to the mystery. And the only one who really shares your doubts is Mrs. Creighton.
I had to come here to Ridgely Plains, Mr. Valentine. I just had to talk to you.
Of course, Mrs. Creighton.
You're upsetting yourself, Edna.
Oh, you're very worried about me, my dear brother. But you would accept that lie about Dan and that Holder woman.
I know your pride is hurt, Edna, but the evidence. Look at the evidence. Only a trusting soul like Ralph Holder wouldn't think anything wrong about not getting any letters from his wife.
Now it turns out she never even went to her folks.
Dan would never leave me like that.
Yes, Edna.
Mr. Valentine.
Yes, Mrs. Creighton.
I want you to go right on working on this case. Stan and I will stay here at the hotel. And I want you to remember what I said about the seed of destruction that lies deep within each criminal.
I remember.
There was foul play, and the criminal will give himself away. He must.
You're a very optimistic woman, Mrs. Creighton, but I'll do what I can.
Okay, Mr. Dorr, Mr. Valentine's here. What's on your mind?
Well, I feel I must tell you the name of the woman I spent that afternoon with, Mr. Valentine.
Okay. Who was it?
Mrs. Holder.
The femme fatale of Ridgely Plains.
Keep talking, Paul.
I had a date with her. I picked her up after Mr. Holder had his lunch and went back to the theater. We rode around, stopped for a drink in a little cabin the Holders have not far from here.
Nice girl. Kept her date with the kid here. Met Creighton somewhere in Chicago the next day.
Uh-huh. I wonder.
The cartoon is on now, Mr. Valentine. We can talk here in the lobby. The Mickey Mouse always goes over big here.
So I hear. Mr. Holder, was there any special reason for your wife's trip to Chicago?
Reason?
Well, now, you can be honest with me. I'm trying to get at the truth.
It's hard to know what truth is, isn't it? I thought Dottie really liked me. Maybe she didn't love me, but I thought she liked me.
I'm sure she did.
No, she didn't. Oh, she wasn't bad, but she liked to flirt. I thought a visit to her folks would do her good. Maybe she'd miss me a little and things would be different between us.
Do you think she and Mr. Creighton ran away together?
I don't know what to think. Oh, I kid myself, Mr. Valentine. Sure they ran away together. They sure go big for Mickey Mouse.
I don't know what you expect to find here in Mrs. Holder's room, George.
Maybe nothing. Just curious about how she lived.
Yes, well, I had a job getting permission from the chief here. After all, we're pretty sure now no crime has been committed.
But, Johnson, there are too many loose threads.
Like what?
Like Stanley Collins's pretty good motive for killing Creighton.
Now, look here, Valentine.
Well, I'm not making accusations. I'm just thinking out loud.
Certainly enough pictures of Dottie Holder around.
She liked herself.
And Mrs. Creighton isn't fooling anyone with all this talk of her husband's loyalty. She knew him for what he was for a long time.
Valentine, stop making a mystery of everything.
Well, this would be Dottie's closet, I suppose.
Brilliant deduction.
Let's see.
Not much left in here.
Oh. A couple of old dresses she probably didn't think were worth taking.
We're wasting our time. Look, Valentine, Mrs. Johnson is expecting me home for dinner.
Oh, that's funny.
What is, darling?
These shoes. Look.
Well, they're brand new.
Yeah.
So what?
So, why didn't Dottie take them along?
Yeah, that is funny.
She probably bought them for this trip and... Just a minute.
Now what are you looking for?
Not here. Nope, they aren't here at all.
George, if you don't stop acting so mysterious...
Excuse me a minute, Angel. I gotta make a phone call.
Well, yes, but George, you
can... Hey, what was the number of the movie house again? Oh, yeah, here it is.
What do you expect Holder to tell you?
Just what Mrs. Holder took with her.
No man ever pays enough attention to know.
Maybe, but I... Hello, may I speak to... Oh, it's you, Holder. No, nothing really new. I was just wondering if you know what Mrs. Holder took with her in the way of clothes. Uh-huh. Oh, I see. Oh, her brother has a clothing store in Chicago, huh? Oh, yes, it's just that we found a brand new pair of shoes in Mrs. Holder's closet, and we were wondering why she didn't take them. Yeah, I guess so. Forgot them, yeah, maybe. All right, thanks, Mr. Holder.
Well, what do you think you accomplished?
She took only a couple of handbags, a few dresses, some underthings, some toilet articles, that's all.
So?
Her brother has a clothing store. She was going to get a lot of new things there.
Okay. So what do we do now?
Well, we wait a little while for the seed of destruction to begin to sprout. Then we go to work.
George, I don't think there's anybody around here at all.
Oh, now don't you be a cynic, Angel. We lost the good lieutenant to the lure of Mrs. Johnson's famous corned beef and cabbage. That's enough.
Oh, I'm the true blue type, George. I stick it out. Even though I don't know why.
No lights in the house. No car anywhere around.
Just as I said. No nothing.
Well, let's see now. You might as well sit out here on the porch, Angel.
What are you going to do?
Look around for signs of freshly dug earth.
Oh. Oh, maybe I will just sit here.
I'll be back after a while, Brooks.
Oh, great. Well, at least I can have a cigarette and relax a little. Oh, my feet hurt.
I wouldn't bother to sit down, Miss Brooks.
Oh, Mr. Holder.
Quiet, please.
I wouldn't want to kill you just yet, but I will if you force me to.
Oh, I never argue with anybody who has a gun. Never.
Please go inside. No, we won't put on any lights. We'll just sit here in the dark and wait.
Wait for what?
For Mr. Valentine to come back.
But why?
You mustn't think I'm a fool, Miss Brooks. I know Mr. Valentine suspects me. Ever since he mentioned that pair of shoes, I knew I'd have to kill him. Both of you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He'll find the place where ground was freshly dug. Find it sooner or later. My own place was the only one where I could work safely, wasn't it?
You killed both Mr. Creighton and your wife.
I killed him first. I knew he had all that money. I saw him flirt with the cashier, and I knew he'd been watching Dottie. So I made her call him at the theater. Came over to the house. I killed him.
But if your wife...
I hated her. I knew I could never trust her, so I had to protect myself, didn't I? Didn't I?
Oh, sure.
He'd already made plans for her to go to Chicago. Everybody knew it. So I took her here, and she didn't even like me anymore. I had to kill her.
What are you going to do now?
In a minute, I'll open the door and let Mr. Valentine in. I must protect myself against everybody.
No.
I have money now. I need time. Come on with me, Miss Brooks, to the door.
Please, Mr. Holder, you can't go on killing...
Don't be such an impatient young man, Mr. Valentine. I'm coming.
Oh, I see, Fusco.
George!
Drop that gun.
No.
I said drop it.
That's a nice boy.
I'll kill you.
Just go along quietly or I'll carry you out.
Yes, I'll come along.
George, did you hear what...
Yeah, I heard enough.
The doorbell. It's still ringing. I thought I was safe as long as I heard you ring the doorbell.
Yes, George, how did you
manage... Shades of Halloween. A pin in the bell. The seed of destruction can take all sorts of shapes, can't it?
She meant nothing to Dan. I must believe that, always.
That's right, Mrs. Creighton.
He still loved me. Well, here is your check, Mr. Valentine. And thanks for everything you've done.
I'm sorry I couldn't have brought you happier news.
Oh, I wanted the truth. Well... My brother is waiting for me. Goodbye, Miss Brooks. Mr. Valentine.
Bye. That poor woman.
Yeah.
You know, George, I still don't quite understand that business about the pair of shoes.
Well, that was only part of it, Brooksy. It's what I didn't find in Mrs. Holder's closet that really got me thinking.
Hmm?
Well, I didn't find any bedroom slippers. And Holder didn't mention her taking a pair along. Now, a woman has at least one pair of slippers. We found them on her body. Holder thought his wife was all ready for the train when he killed her. He didn't notice she was still wearing her slippers. That's why she didn't take her new shoes. And that also meant she was killed before she left the house.
The little things we overlook.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe there is something in that German proverb, the seed of destruction.
Come on, George, come on.
Where are you going? What's the hurry?
Well, look at the time. I made dinner. It's waiting.
Oh, okay, okay. Take it easy.
Well, take it easy, nothing. There's a good American proverb that might work also. The way to a man's heart is through his stomach. You coming, George?
Tonight's transcribed adventure of George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard Oil Company of California on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West.
Let George Do It on Tuned To Yesterday from August 18th, 1952 on the Mutual Don Lee Network. If you are a listener in the greater L.A. area at that time at 8 o'clock when it was first broadcast on KHJ, you could have also tuned in for the news on KLAC, a Christian Science lecture on KFWB, or NBC affiliate KFI's broadcast of one of the longest-running soap opera/drama series in radio history, Carlton E. Morse's One Man's Family. It's an hour of crime on Tuned To Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levinier, and now a show geared toward men has its build. It's High Adventure, from April 9th, 1950 on NBC. With an all-star cast of Maurice Tarplin, John Larkin, and Gene Tatum, this episode from Robert Monroe called The Inside Story.
Cholton, makers of Old Spice aftershave lotion for that top-of-the-world feeling after every shave, brings you the top of the world in action drama for men. High Adventure!
Adventure! Adventure!
High Adventure. This is the meeting place for those of you who like to give your nerves a little exercise. Because we specialize in stories of hard, savage action designed to keep you right on the edge of your chair. This is High Adventure. At this meeting, Inside Story, a big city tale written and directed especially for High Adventure by Robert Monroe. It concerns three people, two of whom wanted to live and the other wouldn't die. Inside Story, as told by the man it happened to, a man called Jim Hannigan. His moment of high adventure.
The first day I joined the paper, I was called into the old man's office. All the guys out in the city room said he was tough, said he had ink in his veins instead of blood, so for me, just getting started, this was a high point. But like I said, I walked into his office, and if anything, they hadn't told me enough. He was tough, all right, and shrewd and calculating and knowing, too. But he told me some things that day that I've never forgotten. He said, Hannigan, I don't want any milksops on my paper, and I don't want any fancy Dans either. He said, I want circulation. And you don't get circulation by writing great literature, by having a heart. Smell out the story, write it in one-syllable words, and if anybody gets hurt by it, that's their lookout, not yours. Well, I remembered that, and he was right. I covered a lot of good stories and worked my way up the hard way. There are a lot of people who didn't understand, like Laurie, but I didn't let that stop me. I was coming to the office one morning late. I'd wound up the Flynn story the day before and been out doing a little relaxing.
Good afternoon, Superman.
Very funny.
Old man wants to see you whenever you're in the mood, Hannigan.
And tell him that... Oh, all right. Good morning, Laurie.
You trying to be funny?
What? Oh, you too, huh?
Well, after all, it is all...
Yeah, I know. Can't a guy relax once in a while?
Oh. Aspirin in your top left-hand drawer.
Oh, thanks.
Any calls?
Burgess called. Wants to meet you for lunch.
Oh, I can't go.
I made the appointment for tomorrow.
Thanks. Anything else?
Mr. Taylor has the contracts ready.
Good.
And the old man...
Yeah, I know.
He sounded mad.
Oh, my head...
Go on in the office. I'll bring you some water.
Yeah.
Here's your hemlock, Socrates.
Thanks. Well, that ought to help.
Big night, huh?
Big head.
Where'd you go?
Don't remember, after 10 or 11.
Date?
Yeah, I think so.
Pretty?
How do I know? I can't even remember.
It's nothing.
What's the matter with you?
Nothing at all.
Well, then?
But just for the record, Mr. Big, you and I had a small appointment last night.
We did?
We did? Yes, we did. And I gave up another chance to see South Pacific.
Now, don't let that worry you.
Just even say he's sorry.
I'll take you to South Pacific.
You've only been saying that for a year now.
Well, I mean it.
When?
Well, Saturday night. Yeah, Saturday night.
I'll believe it when
okay, you call my ticket agent, tell him.
Oh, that's great. Now I have to get the tickets.
Well, it's just that I'm so busy.
Okay, okay. Some date. Feel better?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, then you better.
Oh, no, you take it.
All right. Mr. Hannigan's office. It's Mrs. Carlton.
I'm not here.
Oh, Mrs. Carlton, this is Miss Jones. Can I help you? He's not in this morning. I see. Just a minute, please.
Well?
She's such a nice woman.
No.
Have a heart, Jim.
You tell her that when that no-good son of hers stops getting into trouble, I'll stop printing stories about him.
It's only a page 10 item.
It's a story.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mrs. Carlton. We've already gone to press. You're welcome. You're a rat, Hannigan.
Jonesy.
Yes, a first-class heel.
Gotta be tough, Laurie. Enough heart trouble in this racket without going soft. You think
I've heard it before, Jim.
Well, you keep forgetting it.
No, I don't.
Oh, come on, honey. Let's kiss and make up.
Huh? Don't you dare.
Baby.
Hannigan.
Now, that's better. Now, gotta go see the old
man. What?
I said I gotta go see...
You beast.
Baby.
Oh, why do I let you do it?
You know me. Business first.
Yeah, I know you.
Wouldn't want me to lose my job, would you?
Oh, no. That's the last thing I'd want to happen.
See? Now, let's get down to work.
Character. I almost forgot.
What?
There's been a Mr. Rubo waiting to see you since 9 o'clock.
Rubo?
Said he knew you in school.
Yeah.
It's not my idea of a Yale man. I can stall him if you want to see the old man first.
No, no, better get it over with.
What?
I said bring him in.
Okay, but the old man's going to be sore. This is Miss Rubo.
That will be all, Miss Jones.
Yes, Mr. Hannigan.
Well, what can I do for you, Rubo?
Smart boy.
I try to be.
A little bit too smart.
What's that supposed to mean?
What you did to my boy Flynn.
He was a jerk.
Maybe. Maybe so.
You know he was.
He had a lot to learn, but he was a good boy.
Depends on where you're sitting.
Now, I can't learn nothing for 15 years. We don't like that.
Business risk.
Good boys are hard to find.
I got my own troubles.
We don't like it to happen again.
Tell your boys to be more careful.
I like you, Hannigan.
Thanks.
I don't want to see you get sick or nothing.
I see.
You start playing around with City
Look,
Hall.
Look, Rubo, this is strictly business with me. I'm not cleaning up the city or riding any white horses. You got your racket, I got mine. If it's a story, I'm going to print it. That's all.
That's why I like you.
Tell your mob to smarten up. There won't be any trouble. But when they're jerks like Flynn, I'll get them every time.
Everybody makes mistakes.
And that's when I catch them.
I don't like that.
That's too bad.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Hannigan, but there's an old man outside who wants to see you right away. Says it's important.
Who is it?
Didn't give me his name.
Tell him I'll see him in a minute.
Whatever you say.
Well, anything else, Rubo?
Sure, I got plenty to say.
Well, I'm busy.
Oh, I can wait.
Look.
Go and see the old man. I wait here.
You said your piece, now beat
Go
it.
Go on. I like your company, Hannigan. I wait here.
Okay. But I'm leaving that door open.
Smart boy.
Where is he, Laurie?
Out in the hall, boss.
Oh, now cut that. Why didn't you bring him in
here?
He
wanted to wait out there.
Okay, okay. Keep your eye on that character.
Of course.
You wanted to see me?
I don't know what it's all about.
Well, what do you mean?
Rubo told me...
What the... Stop him! Somebody stop him!
See, you all right, Jim?
Yeah, I'm okay.
The man?
He's dead.
What happened?
I don't know. Somebody shot him.
Who?
I didn't see him. Just shot him and ran.
Where'd you get the gun?
I picked it up, pulled the trigger. It was empty.
I'll call the police.
Something happened, Hannigan?
Well, you want to know.
Looks bad.
What do you mean?
Nobody out in the hall. We hit a couple of shots. They come out and find a dead guy.
No, you don't.
And you got the gun in
you
your...
You don't pin this on me.
Flynn will be sorry to hear about this.
You crazy!
Not so loud, Hannigan.
Just before he got it, he said your name.
Can you prove that? See?
I don't care how it looks.
What do you say? They make one mistake, that's when I get them? Every time?
Oh, you dirty...
Looks bad, Hannigan. You better clear out for a while.
Nobody's going to...
Lay low till it blows over. Go on, before the cops come.
Maybe I will.
Go on, get going.
I'll see you again, Rubo. I'll see you again.
Shot down in cold blood in the offices of a busy newspaper. Hundreds of witnesses around and no way to prove your innocence. A ruthless game where the stakes are high and all the chips are blue. Don't go away, for this is the beginning of another high adventure. Thank you.
I'd been framed and framed good, so I got out fast. I knew it looked bad, but I had to take that chance. I got out in the street and headed for the nearest movie. I'd be safe there for a while, and I could do some uninterrupted thinking. Myself, I don't like the movies, but did you ever sit through one three times? Brother. About 9 o'clock that night, I went down to the lobby and called Laurie. I gave her the names of the three most influential people I knew in town, asked her to call them, and then meet me in the theater. Then I went back to the last row in the balcony to wait. In about a half an hour, I saw her struggling up the aisle.
Is that hot?
I couldn't I?
Well, yes, I suppose you could.
And what do you mean by that remark?
Oh, I know you so well, Reggie. Far better than you think.
Sorry, I forgot my help in stock.
Thanks for coming, Laurie.
How long have you been here?
Since noon.
Aren't you dizzy? I brought a couple of sandwiches.
Yeah, I meant to tell you.
You could at least say thanks.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I had a fig Newton, about five. They're great for a hangover.
Eat these, you'll feel better.
Yeah.
What's the movie?
Is that important?
No, I guess not.
What about me?
I've seen it before, anyway.
I've laundry tub all day while you're off gambling our hard-earned savings at the track. Did you ever think of that?
To tell you the truth, I haven't.
She's awfully attractive.
Who?
The girl in the movie.
Oh. Yeah, of course.
Because why, Jen?
Because I'm going to have another baby.
Oh, I say, Jen, old girl.
This as close as you could come to South Pacific?
Well, I wasn't in a position to be choosy.
Well, I think at least...
Shh.
Oh, sorry.
If you really cared, you'd be home helping me take care of the house and things.
Well, see here now.
Yes, you would.
That sort of thing can be carried too far, you know.
You would not.
No.
You better?
Much.
Why'd you come here?
I couldn't go home. First, I was going to go to your place, then I figured that'd be the second place they'd look.
What's it feel like to be the hottest man in New York?
It's not fun.
That's one of the crazy things.
What?
Run away. Why?
I'll tell you later.
Every paper in the city has the story, pictures and everything.
Of me?
Full page. I couldn't forget you if I wanted to.
That's bad.
Why?
Cuts down my time. Few days and every jerk with a nickel for a paper will know me by heart.
Hey, you two shut up.
Stop, blow.
Sorry.
Why doesn't he go someplace else if he wants to see a movie?
Bright remark of the week.
Hey, did you call Jenkins?
Yes.
What'd he say?
Sorry, he can't help.
What is a district attorney for?
He said there was nothing he could do, and even if there were, he wouldn't do it.
Some friend.
Well, you weren't exactly kind to him during the gambling investigation.
Well, that's business.
Guess he figures so's this.
Yeah. What'd the old man say? What'd he say?
He said it'd make a better story if you got out of it yourself.
Oh, fine. Well, I'm not surprised. How about Costello?
Same thing.
What do you mean?
He said it was about time you had some heat on the back of your neck.
Oh.
Well, mad dog?
What's the mad dog business?
That's what they're calling you in the papers. Mad dog murderers.
Laurie!
Hey, will you two shut up? Do I have to call a manager?
I'm sorry. Laurie, you don't think that I did it?
No. You're a rat, Hannigan, but not that much of a one.
Well, that's better.
What do we do now?
We've got to do it alone, that's all.
Okay, where do we start?
Well, let's see. Got the gun, but that's no help.
No.
The old man, the only thing I remember about him was that he had a wart in his left eyebrow.
That eliminates all the right eyebrow warts.
If I wanted a hard-up old man to knock off, where would I go?
City Hall.
The Bowery, yeah, that's it. Did the cops find anything on him?
Just his name. Cyrus P. Smith.
Oh, it'd have to be Smith. It couldn't be Brinkowski or something like that.
Hey, come on, Hayes. If we're going to see the picture, we better...
Stay there, buddy. We're leaving. Let's go, Laurie. I got a lot to do. Tired?
Oh, no. I've been in training.
Well, I'm sorry. It's taken so long.
That's all right. Nothing like walking the Bowery to keep a girl in shape.
You got to be careful. You can't tell the cops from the hoods down here.
It's all right.
You know, you're quite a girl, Jonesy.
Just about run out of joints, haven't we?
I mean it.
I think we've talked to every bum on the street.
I know you don't want to, but I'm going to talk about it.
It's hardly the setting.
I don't know. I kind of like it.
Character.
What do you want, Laurie? Did you ever think about it?
Oh, never. I just go home, climb into bed, and fall right off to sleep.
Oh, now be serious.
Why?
Because I am.
All right. I know what I don't want.
What?
I want to be able to sleep at night. I don't want to have to worry about my guy, where he is, what he's doing, what mobster he's playing hide and seek with tonight.
I see.
I want to go to bed and have him next to me and know he's going to be there every night for the rest of my life. If he isn't a big shot, well... What's the difference? As long as he likes my coffee.
Guy's got to do what he likes.
Some guys.
This guy.
So why did we start talking?
I don't know, Laurie.
Jim.
What?
Don't look now, but that crumb behind us has been following us for two blocks.
Where?
Don't look.
I'll just keep walking.
Uh-huh.
Act like nothing's happened. If we can make it to that alley. He's still there?
Yes, he's gaining on us.
I might walk a little bit faster, but not obvious. All right. Come on, up this alley and run. Quick, hide in this doorway.
This is what I need.
Shh.
Run.
It might be a cop.
Oh.
What do you want?
Run up a blind alley, didn't you?
What do you want?
Thought you could run away from me, didn't you? I know every hole in this street. Every one of them.
All right, you're a smart guy. Now, what do you want?
Don't make me mad. Could want most anything.
Jim.
Get away from her.
Hey, there goes my match.
Don't light another.
Better in the dark, huh?
Yeah.
Ain't you the fellow that was asking about Cy Smith?
What's it to you?
Okay, if you feel that way.
No, wait. What do you know about him?
Something.
I don't remember talking to you.
You didn't. I heard you asking them.
When'd you come up?
Figured we could talk better business alone.
How much?
How much is it worth to you?
$10.
What'd you say, Hannigan?
25. 50. No more.
Fair enough.
All right, what do you know?
Money first.
How do I know you got what I want?
Okay, if you feel...
All right, all right. Money first. Here you... Oh, I haven't got my wallet. Laurie, have you got any
money? Of course.
30, 40, 50. Now, what do you know?
2 days ago, Cy came down to the street. Had $100 with him.
Where'd he get it?
Pay.
From who? Rubo?
No.
No, I knew he was smarter than that. Who?
Vincenetta.
That's worth $50. Come on, Laurie.
See you around, Hannigan.
Yeah, sure. We'll split a can of Sterno someday. Come on, Laurie.
Vince Anyetta. That name rang a bell. One of Rubo's gunmen who'd been mixed up in a smuggling racket 10 years ago and had been sent up for 15 years. Probably out on good behavior. Maybe even made a break. I didn't know. First thing in the morning, I went over to the pool room where Anyetta used to hang out, but he hadn't been there for days. I was lucky and bought his address from a rack boy for $10. I beat it over to a tenement on the Lower East Side, but the landlady told me that he hadn't been there since yesterday. Then I remembered the shack on the west shore of Staten Island that had been used as a drop back in the smuggling days. I called Laurie, and she picked me up in her car at Times Square. She wanted to come along, but the pace was getting too hot. So I put her in a cab, took her car, and headed for Staten Island. There was a cop at the ferry entrance, so I went back to the Brooklyn Bridge and took the 69th Street ferry for the island. Things were going too smooth. I drove out along the west shore till there was nothing but me and the dunes. Through Green Ridge, then about 5 miles beyond New Springville, I saw it. One of those old weather-beaten houses with a lot of gingerbread. All the shutters were drawn, not a sign of life anywhere. I pulled into the yard.
Where are you?
In here. What do you want?
What happened to you?
Rubo tried to knock me over last night.
Nice guy.
Yeah.
How'd you get out here?
I got weight.
You hurt bad?
6 slugs in me.
Better get you to a doctor.
Hey, get back.
Okay.
What do you want?
What do you know about Cyrus P. Smith?
Plenty.
What?
I ain't talking.
I know you set him up for the job.
So?
Who killed him? Come on, Anyetta. Who are you shielding?
Get back!
Why did Rubo have your gun?
Afraid I'd talk.
Oh, that doesn't make sense.
What?
He's afraid you'll talk, so he had you shot down. Now you won't talk?
So?
So what are you shielding him for?
Why should I help you?
Look, and yet unless I get you to a doctor, you'll probably die. Then I'll never be able to get Rubo.
Suppose I don't croak.
You're dying on your feet right now.
Shut up.
There, you see?
Hey, get back! Okay. Okay, what do you want?
Who killed the old man?
I did.
You?
Yeah. Rubo said it was a soft touch, just routine. Then when I found out there was a big fish like you on the line, I wouldn't want dough. Always that way. I go with some little guy nobody cares about, gets hushed up in a hurry, that's easy. Get a big shot mixed up in it, everything goes haywire. Takes dough. I've been in it before, I know.
Rubo wouldn't pay you and tried to kill you so you wouldn't talk.
Yeah. Get back, you're not taking me in.
I don't want you in yet, I want the big guy. If you sign a statement, I'll see it goes easy on you. Agneta. Agneta. Oh, he's dead. Now what? Phone. I gotta get to a phone. I called Laurie and told her what to do, then I beat it back into town. The guy at the ferry wanted to know how my windshield got busted. I told him somebody took a shot at me. He said I was lucky I didn't get hit. When I was back in town by 4 o'clock, I went right over to Rubo's apartment. The doorman said he wasn't in, so I went up and waited. It's amazing how many doors a $10 bill will open. It was one of those real lush joints, all glass and chromium with a potted palm every 5 feet. I'd been there about a half an hour when I heard his key in the lock.
Well, hello, smart boy.
You're not surprised.
Nah.
I said I'd see you again.
I've been expecting you.
Oh?
I thought you'd be here sooner.
I was tied up.
What do you want?
Plenty.
Drink?
Nope.
I always...
We won't have time.
Are we going someplace?
Right down to the paper. I want to get the story before the cops do.
You're acting pretty sure of yourself.
Well, I know some things you don't.
Like what?
I found Vince and Yetta. Alive.
I was worried about Vince.
And he talked. Plenty.
I like to see Agneta.
Don't worry. He's where you'll never find him.
How do I know you're not bluffing?
Agneta hired Cy Smith for $100. Smith came to my office and got me out in the hall. Agneta shot him, but he thought it was a pushover. When he found out it was bigger than that, he came to you for more money. When you wouldn't give it to him, he threatened to talk. So your boys took him out for a little air. But it didn't work.
Everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah, that's right. Want any more?
You make mistakes, too.
Oh, put the gun away. I thought of that, too.
What stops me if I shoot you now?
My office knows where I am. If I'm not back at the paper by 5 o'clock, they'll have you picked up for my murder. Oh, we got 10 minutes. What are you going to do, Rubo?
What can I do? You think of everything.
I thought you'd be smart. You've already got 2 murders against you.
2? Smith and who? Agneta, maybe? I knew you was bluffing, smart boy.
Give me that.
Oh. That hit you, Pug.
I'll get you. Leg off. You scum. Drop it. Drop it. Now. Just you and me.
All right.
Like this fella.
Smart boy.
No guns. No nothing. Just you and me. Get up. Get up, punk. You got more coming. I'm going to kill you.
No, stop it.
I'll kill you.
Stop. Stop. I'll do anything you say. Anything, Hanukkah.
I've gone through a lot to get this story. Come on, smart boy.
Is your shoulder all right?
Yeah, it's okay.
Here, let me help you out.
Ah, stop fussing.
Mean old man.
Oh.
There, see?
All right.
Love the excitement just before the curtain goes up.
Yeah.
I can hardly wait to hear some enchanted... You're not even listening, Jim.
There's Big Boss Scully.
Where?
Over there. With all the wheels from Universal Steel.
Hannigan.
Huh?
You promised.
But there might be
no
a big...
more stories, remember?
Jonesy,
no more playing with dynamite.
I want people to like you.
Okay.
And no more underworld connections.
I said okay.
That's better. There go the house lights. I'd still like to know where you got the ticket.
Shh.
I would.
You're bothering people.
Well, I would.
Okay, okay. Rubo.
Inside Story, as lived by Jim Hannigan. That one thrilling moment in the life of a man that has but one meaning, high adventure. And here's the fine folk who gave you those fine high adventure performances. Heard as Jim Hannigan with John Larkin, with Gene Tatum, Maurice Toplin, Phil Sterling, and Jack Arson. The High Adventure Orchestra was conducted by Mr. Lou Davies. And in next week's meeting, friends and members, we're proud to present a high adventure story of a man who returned from the war and fought his greatest battle at home. It's called The Circle Road, and in the leading role will be that famous personality of stage and screen, Mr. Burgess Meredith. So until next week on The Circle Road, starring Burgess Meredith, remember that wherever you live, whatever you do, it's there to see and find. And we like to call it high adventure.
Enjoy Eddie Cantor and Bob Crosby tonight on NBC.
High Adventure on Tuned to Yesterday from April 9th, 1950 on NBC. And that brings to an end this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.